The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
Alright folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. We're doing another Q&A, which means I've got the dude. What are you doing, dude?
Dude, what day is it?
I don't know. I have no clue.
Where are we? What day is it, man?
Like, what day? What year is it? It's the worst year ever is what year it is. I'll tell you that. And special guest, I'm going to narc you out. The dudette is also on the line. Say hello, dudette.
Hey, how's it going?
There we go. That is the dudette.
Thanks, Stephen. Thank you. Guys, my girlfriend Stephanie is here with me. She's actually researching hiking boots.
Hiking boots. Welcome to the Hiking Boot Podcast.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we've been quarantining, it's actually a wonderful time to get out and explore the backcountry.
Absolutely.
And obviously, there's nobody around, and just like muskie fishing, it's like you can definitely get away from society. So we've been doing a little bit of that, and I will say on a happy note, although we don't know what day or year it is or even what month it is, I can tell you, Stephen, you're in a different situation where you are in Tennessee, but here in the North Woods, boy, I tell you what, every day, these lakes are getting closer and closer to ice out. They're pumping water through the Three Lakes chain right now, and they're raising the levels. I mean, man, it's starting to look better and better. It really is.
I'll tell you, in wherever you are, whatever you're doing, however the quarantine's hitting you, get out and try to fish to stay sane. I mean, I was out on the boat today. You can't self-isolate more than being on a fishing boat alone.
Oh, my God. Well, dude, I'm seeing the pictures, Stephen, you're sending me. I mean, I'm like, oh, my gosh, look at this. Guys, I know. I mean, I shouldn't say anything, but I'm seeing you all slimed up. I'm like, oh, man, I can't wait to get out. I'm starting to, like, just go fish little stretches of chains that are open because of the currents and stuff. I mean, I'm knocking on the door.
Absolutely. So, I mean, if nothing else, just get out. Hell, go bank fishing if you got to, if you're quarantined up there, folks. So,
I know you've caught some big ones bank fishing, and as have I. I've actually my second muskie in my life bank fishing. We don't even need to go down that tangent right now.
Tangent.
Me started. Tonight.
All right, here comes more tangent for you, folks, because it's the first questions up from Nathan T. He says, I'm loving the podcast. Well, thank you. We love you, Nathan.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan.
He said, I'm getting information I can't find on the internet, not just for muskies, but fishing in general. Cool. I don't know what else he's getting.
That's awesome, man. I'm like, that makes my night right there.
Well, me and Chaz are idiots, so I'm sorry. if you think this is good info, we're trying our best. He says, I find myself either changing baits every 5 minutes to half an hour. He said, I'll fish it for 5 minutes or half an hour. And he says, sometimes I throw a bait for an hour at a time just because I like them. I'm having a hard time figuring out what to use on given days, when to use it. Hard time in catching muskies in general, even though I'm putting in hours and efforts. Tom Gelb, exactly is what you're thinking. I'm just wondering, how often do you guys change baits, or any tips you could have for me what baits to try and why I'm not catching muskies or anything.
Stephen, can I?
That one sentence is just Gelbism. So go for it.
This is the first thing I thought of, and this is getting me back. So I don't want to start with the golf stuff again. But there's this old saying in golf: if you want to get good, if you want to get creative, and you want to like force yourself to learn, go out to the golf course with three clubs, a driver, a 7-iron, and a putter. And you got three clubs, and you got to play 18 holes with just three clubs. You have to get really creative in making shots that you wouldn't normally do. So in that mentality, I'm going to challenge Nathan to this. And I'm really, Nathan, I'm challenging you right now. This is my take on your question.
A duel
I'm really
to
excited
the death.
To hear Stephen. I'm really excited to hear your take on this. But my challenge is this. I want you to maybe go out with – now this is going to be tough, but I'd say, I mean, boy, could you do it with like three or four lures? Take a top water.
Nope.
A bucktail, a shallow running crankbait, and a deep running crankbait. Give yourself four lures and that's it. Mm-hmm. Leave the tackle box at home.
Preach.
And now leave the tackle box at home. Take two rods with you, or you know whatever, maybe four baits, four rods, whatever it is. And I mean, obviously, if you're Steven, you're going to take all your line off those reels and go out there,
empty spool.
Get out there, but force yourself to learn how to work those lures and stop getting into this mental dilemma of, oh, it's got to be a little of this, got to be a little of that. Because as guides, I guarantee I'm going to speak for Steven on this. You know, three quarters of the battle, I'd say probably or more, is strategy in your location. Because mm-hmm. if you're not on fish, then you're obviously not going to be catching fish. So if you're not on active fish, then you're out of the ball game.
Doesn't matter. I mean,
yeah, it doesn't matter what you're freaking throwing. If you're not on fish, you are out of the ball game. So, you know, go out with a couple lures, learn to work them well, but focus on your location and your time and your boat control more than you focus on changing lures. I'm done. Over now.
Okay. You nailed it on that. Here's the deal. I am boring when I fish. Today I fished three lures all day. Fished all day long. I caught three muskies and I fished four lures. That was it. I didn't switch colors. I didn't go with anything or that. I own a billion lures. I own more musky lures than
now let me interview. Can I interview you now? Like do a side on. Interview here.
Let's do it.
So Nathan, I'm gonna interview Steven now. Here's a guy just got off the water. So Steven, why did you only use three lures today? You've got 1,000 lures to pick from. Why'd you only use three?
Because I'm lazy. I'm kidding. the snaps hurt my fingers. Because I'm thinking, and I'll tell you the reason why, is because through my experience, I knew those three lures would work. So I didn't have to second guess. So that's what every angler's sort of going for, is like confidence baits. But like in those conditions, I knew I could get those lures where I needed them, doing what I needed them to do.
So if you are not, I like interviewing now. This is fun. Now, Steven, if you don't have confidence, so let's say you're a guy out there that's, I don't know, for new or you, I don't know, you name it. You moved to a new city, new mm-hmm. lake. How do you pick your lures to have confidence in, or what's your remedy for that situation? Say, look, I got, you know, 50 baits. I don't know which one to use. I'm going to, you know, switch every minute. Versus how do I pick my confidence lures? I mean, I think I'm curious to hear what you have to say on that. Cause you know,
well, when I said the Tom Gelbism, which is intelligent time on the water, is this,
it's so key. Yes.
Is that I just had a family situation that I have more musky lures than anybody, you know, I promise you. Oh, that's a fact.
I believe you.
Because it's three households worth of them at this point. I don't fish a lot of lures. And the reason being is because it's not about, I've never thought that switching a lure is going to catch me a muskie. What I've thought about is a great presentation. And if you want to know the difference between the good, bad, and the ugly in the muskie world, is knowing your lures and what they're capable of and how to work them appropriately. So, if a guy like, and if you're asking me or if it translates to anybody, Joe Bucher is self-limited. Joe Bucher, he only throws Joe Bucher baits.
He has a garage of unknown number of musculars.
Right. But he's self-limited to he throws his baits and you go, I mean, other than color and stuff, which is anecdotal at best. I mean, and back to like what you're asking me about why I made that decision. I know that this lure color works in this water column, right? And if you're trying to ascertain that, I'm trying to give a solid answer other than mojo, like, oh, I know all this and all this. If you want the breakdown on what I did and why I did it today, is if you can go on the app and it gives you a water color chart. So I know these bait colors work, right? Mm-hmm. I know from High Bright Sun, Dead Flat Calm articles from Joe what always works in that. We've got High Bright Sun, Dead Flat Calm, so I've paid attention to all the other musky guys, and I went, J.B. Rattler. Right. So now I've broke it down to J.B. Rattler, perch. Those two things work. Now I need to look at what conditions I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with high bright sun, cold water. I've got a lot of sun and it's hitting certain locations. So if you want to know like my thought process, you can actually break it down and mimic it. Where you go, my bait selection was made because of water clarity. My presentations that I picked were based on essentially the demeanor of the fish that I could guess closest based on water temperature, and my locations were based on all the other factors and sort of determining where muskies will be under less prime. I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, I'm trying.
Well, I want to throw one in there. I don't want to necessarily limit myself to just this, but I'll be curious as this. Nathan, and I would say this. I would pick. I'll tell you my four lures right now, and I'm a JBO guy, so I'm. You know, skewed in that nature, so whatever, but you can mix and match. But I would say this, I throw four lures out there right now that I could fish from, you know, the opener in May until ice up in November, and I bet you I would be close to, I don't think I would catch as many if I only limited myself to four, I'll say that, but I bet you I'd be close to catching as many as I would if I didn't limit myself. And I'll tell you what those four lures are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Goldilocks 500.
Yep.
Top Raider, any color, I'd say Baby Loon. 7-inch Shallow Raider, you name the color. It probably doesn't really matter, honestly.
Yeah.
And a Baby Depth Raider. I would love to go with a full-size Depth Raider, but I probably will get more bang for my buck with a Baby Depth Raider, and I'm going to choose Fire Tiger. I will fish those four lures. If you you could challenge me even and say, hey, man, that's all you can throw for 2021.
Right.
And I wouldn't be sitting there crying because I can replace the hooks as long as the baits stay in good shape. You know, it's all like you already hit it on the spot, man. Intelligent time in the water. And like,
yeah, I mean, if you don't. Dude, it's like everybody knows I do the music stuff with Joe, and I'm a musician. In that world, we called guys like you would run into these guys in the music game or in music in general. They would have these amazing guitar collections. You go, and I'm just lusting over like, here's a 58, you know, Les Paul Jr. Here's a 64 Strat. You know, all these phenomenal guitars and this gear that's worth thousands and thousands of dollars. I got thousands of dollars worth of musical gear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they pick it up and they can't play it.
Dude,
what's the point?
If you gave BB King a Fender Squire,
yeah,
$100
piece
up,
and light it up.
Light a room up.
I saw Warren Haynes do that. He jumped on stage with this band, and they had PV amps.
He's amazing.
And Warren, if you don't know, Warren Haynes played with Allman Brothers and all this stuff. But
well, I'm a fan of him just because of Dave Matthews.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw him play with DMB. I mean, holy cow. And, talk about a guy who can rip it.
And he jumps on stage with these guys, and they got, you know, $100 amps, and it sounded like
Warren Mule.
Yeah, but he's jumping up with some local band in Nashville, and it sounded like Warren Haynes in 2 seconds. He turned some knobs and went, well, anyway, how does that sound that good? But he knows what to do, and he can get there with anything. I mean, if you're talking about limiting baits and stuff like that, I mean, I could arbitrarily, let's just say, like, okay, you can have these four baits. If you don't know what to do with them, they're worthless.
And I'm going to say another thing. Yeah. So I'm going to say, Nathan, boy, we're ripping this one apart, but it's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Is, look, man, if you're switching baits that much, then there's – You're showing yourself right now, or at least Stephen and I are revealing a weakness in your musky strategy.
Yeah.
And you're changing baits to compensate for something else in your musky strategy.
Absolutely.
Compensate is a funny word to throw around sometimes. But I'll tell you what, if you're changing lures that much, you're compensating for either I'm saying this in a constructive way.
A lack of patterning
way.
Or a lack of
saying this in a constructive
Absolutely.
Way, not in a mean
that,
way.
That's what
I'm trying to say this as a teacher. I'm a high school teacher. I'm saying, look, don't compensate for lack of musky strategy by changing lures. Learn where the muskies are at the given point in the season and attack.
Absolutely.
Don't change your lures. It has nothing to do, it has less to do with lure selection than it does to do with understanding ecology.
Yep. Become a musky fisherman, don't be a musky lure owner.
Absolutely. Amen, dude. There you go.
and you say you're a teacher. Stephanie, dudette, are you hot for teacher? Next,
what?
Next question is from Quinn. Quinn says, the vlog episode on gear ratios led me to notice that alongside ratios, there's a lot of talk on real arm styles, such as paddle versus power, but very little on real arm length. Do you think there is any advantage to capture, or is there any advantage to be captured by using a longer or shorter real arm?
Boy, so where I'm thinking, so real arm style, but I'm thinking like if I had a paddle handle reel, but it was extended like further out. I'm talking like, so let's say I'm looking at the horizon. It's left to right longer. Are we saying like?
Well, I mean, he's asking like, you know, if you change the length of the arm or these, because if you get on like eBay or Amazon and stuff, there's all these aftermarket like arms and like you
so
can.
I mean, I can answer this with a physics teacher. I mean, I've taught physics.
Lay
in
it
high
on
school,
me, baby.
I can say, without getting super complicated. I mean, if you increase the length of your lever arm, you will have more leverage on the spool. So, I mean, imagine if you were cranking a 400 size Daiwa with a reel handle that was 1 foot long and you had a paddle handle that was as big as your fist. I mean, it would be stupid, but like you have so much power over the spool that you could literally, you wouldn't feel any resistance. You could essentially crank in like a 70 pound muskie and maybe not know it's on there. Like, you know, so, I mean, to that answer, like, yeah, there's certain scenarios where I do like shorter traditional. Now I'm thinking of power handles versus what's the other one called? Paddle handle or
paddle? And I mean, just sort of like the and that's what comes on like the reels I fish. I fish those roundaboo because and they come with like the stand. I put a power handle on those just for fatigue because I mean the advantage to me is not speed or power, it's like,
well, there you go,
less the torque teams on your wrist, the less rotations it has to make.
Yeah, but see, and I guess for me though, there's certain scenarios where I do prefer the smaller paddle handle. My scenario for that is actually pretty limited, but it would be if I'm like on my downsizer rig and I'm fishing a 5-inch baby shallow reader. I like in some instances the smaller reel with the smaller handles. The whole setup is lighter and it allows for some really precise movements of my wrist and forearm and my, you know, there's my scenario for that. And then when I'm fishing more robust lures, I mean, even if it's like a 500 series bucktail, I still like a big power handle because I'm like you said, Stephen, you're reducing fatigue on the body.
I mean,
so
in Quinn, it's a great question about, you know, whether it be the physics or, but you know, the crux of the question is there advantage? There's, I mean, it's just one of these things. It almost goes back to the first question of who cares? You know, it's just like, it's if we are, and Quinn, I'm not knocking you, but this is why I tell people on my boat all the time, my guide clients, right? They'll look at me and this all ties together. It's all musky fish in the boat. I'll have them on a baby DR, you know? And basically all I buy is bait fish. I'll throw bait. I don't care if it's cloudy. I don't care if it's sunny. I'll throw the same color in the bait. Should I change colors? And I go, if it matters, if I've got the pink one on or a bait fish color one on, we're just not going to catch that fish. If it boils down to, if there's going to be an advantage to me catching a fish between handles, I'm just not going to catch that
I
fish.
I agree with you. And I've said this before on other podcasts, and I don't know why some things stick with you as you go on in life, but one of our legendary anglers, Herbie, Steve Herbeck, old owner of Annie Myers Lodge and recoverer of cancer. Hell yeah, Steve. Yep. Keep rocking, baby. But, you know, he said, you know, if I want to crank faster, I just freaking crank faster. I don't get a higher gear ratio. It's like, it's
that's
hilarious.
What I do.
Because it's true, though. You know, it's like I only use two different gear ratios.
Right.
I mean, now maybe I'm got a silver spoon for doing that. I don't know, but I got two gear ratios.
I secretly have a 6-3-1 in the boat for when I'm feeling frisky as a go.
Now that's my middle of the road. Come on, man.
5-3-1 all day.
You are old school, but and then
all
you fill those
day.
Gaps. half full with lines. So, I mean, you're like, it's like a 4.1 to 1.
Dude. Buddy, you wait till this episode comes out with Book Daddy. Slow and low is how I get it done.
And I know you tore him up in August too. So I believe you, man. Yeah. I know you tore him up and there's something to be said for going slow. And I'm not going to, I am a super serious.
I fish like
too.
I like my women slow.
Stephanie didn't even smile over here. She's shopping, man.
That's awful. Das Boot? Yes.
Yeah, and she's shopping over here.
You finding some nice canes?
Steph, what are you looking at over there?
I'm looking at some hiking boots.
Which ones are you looking at
right
now?
What are you thinking?
They're the Salomon.
It's hard to find women's hiking boot in a size 17.
I know. It's really tough is what I've realized. It's between the Quest 4D3 GTX version or the 3D GTX. It's a really tough decision.
What do you think, Chaz?
Ladies and gentlemen, we will come back to this moment of the podcast in 20 minutes. We'll see if we have an answer.
Boot shopping. All right. There's no socializing. There's nothing. You know what's going on out there. If you're stuck going to work and you have to see, you know, there's nothing. There's no life. There's only fishing and boot shopping. I knock it all the time. Like sort of my big thing on the podcast is less is more and you don't need this and you don't need that. You know, I'm that guy. I've always been that guy, man. I was on the muskyshop.com last night. I was just sitting there going, man, I'm about to buy like four of those. You know, so I'm just like geeking out. Like literally, I'm laying in bed. I should be asleep, and I'm like just going through baits. Going, that looks cool. That looks
good. Well, you know, and less is more. And I would be a hypocrite if I said, like, if you looked in my like. So I'll throw Stephanie back in the mix here. Like uh-huh. She goes through the garage the other day, and she's like, "Oh my god, all these lures! Why do you need so many?" And I'm like, well, you know, there's a lot of answers to that question. And well, you know, first of all, there's so many scenarios that come up over the course of an entire season, like, you know, there's things that only you would know if you spent that much time in the water where you're like, this is what I need. That's what I need. Like, you know, and it's about having confidence sometimes, but you know, I am a believer though in, I guess there are certain colors that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've seen it when it doesn't matter if I'm guiding for walleyes or smallmouth bass, or if you're, you know, if you're fishing for pike, oh my God, have I seen it with pike as visual mm-hmm. predators where, you know, if you're not fishing with the right color, you're going to get outfished 10-1. And it's like, and I've seen it with four guys casting in a boat, and I know you have too. Or as Joe and dare I bring up the old crankbait secrets, rattles versus no rattles, chapter 18, or what? You right. know, probably I don't know the exact chapter, but it's probably chapter 18.
Are we chapter and verse? Yeah, Booker.
Well, remember verse 16. Remember verse 10, chapter 18. Where it's after the best chapter that has ever been written. Uh-huh. And Joe, if you're listening to this, you know what? You probably don't have, and actually, I'll say this: you probably have more than Stephen and I of the biggest fans that you will ever have to write another book. Damn it, Joe. Write another darn book, will you?
Absolutely.
But, you know, the chapter on night fishing, I don't want to, we're going on a tangent now.
Of course.
The chapter on night fishing in Crankbait Secrets is possibly the best chapter I've ever read in any outdoor publication.
Mm-hmm.
That one for me sealed the deal when I was a kid, and it probably led to my obsession as of now. That's so. Anyway, I'm going off.
Absolutely.
Going off. Bring me back.
Next one up is from Charles. He says, all the users, I love you. I'm on a tangent now because he just, it's like Dumb and Dumber version. He says, all righty. Like, it's like a bunch of T's and Y's. So Charles says, all righty. So I'm on a 57-hour dry spell. Aren't we all? He says,
it's not that long. Jesus, come on, man.
54 hours casting, three. I like this guy already because he's like got it down to that. It's like 54 hours casting, 3 hours.
4 hours. Okay. Okay.
3 hours trolling. He said 57 hour dry spell. He's got 54 casting, 3 hours trolling. He said, I've joined the club.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, you're telling me. Me and Chaz are pros here. We catch one like every 400 hours. I didn't know you're supposed to catch one every day. Jeez.
Oh, shit.
That's why musky fishing is so great. You're like, I caught a fish today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just
it's amazing. Yeah, I get off the water with a musky in the net. I'm like, this is amazing.
You know, cue the music. I'm like the baddest dude there. You talk to a bass fish, I'm like, how many you catch that? Caught one. I'm such a bad mofo, you know. Anyway, God, we're idiots for fishing for these things. But he says, I'm on a 57-hour dry spell, 54 casting, 3 hours trolling. I've been picking my days properly, moon phase, winds, fishing the warmest waters, fishing all day at times. The plan is to flip it upside down and fish at night until after the spawn and post-spawn. The walleye are spawning at night. Loud and obnoxious on the, he said, I'm running loud and obnoxious on rock walls. I plan on using the JB Depth Raider in walleye pattern, JB Rattlers, Shallow Invaders, Spinner Baits. What other baits would you recommend? Thank you.
I want to bite right away on this.
Lay it on me.
Oh, man. Okay. So first of all, and who asked the question again?
Charles.
Now, I don't know where's Charles raining from?
No clue. While I was spawning all this stuff, he's going to be south of you guys, so he's south of Illinois.
I want to be just frank here as a biology teacher.
Hello, Frank.
If muskies are having sex, they're not going to be eating. You know, so there's one thing. Like fish for another species, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And if you get an open season, like I'm not digging on you, but if muskies are doing it and they're having sex, well, if you've gone 57 hours and 4 minutes or whatever it is, it's like, well, yeah, because maybe they're literally the 95% of them are not eating right now. So that's a possibility. And the second possibility that I initially thought of right away was get off whatever water you're on. And change something. Like, get off. Like, that's why I love Northern Wisconsin.
Well, that's the thing that I'm gonna cut you off there because if he's saying, you know, it's this time of year and he's spending that kind of time. I mean, this is, you know, anything south down here, West Virginia, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, you know, all that stuff, Indiana. It's not the land of 10,000 lakes.
Okay, so that's why I feel very blessed up here is because I can fish 5 different mm-hmm. lakes or 10 different lakes in the course of a day. I mean, realistically, 5 different bodies of water. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if I'm sitting there going, oh my God, if I'm on the Three Lakes chain, I haven't caught a fish in 3 days, something ain't right. And I'm leaving and, you know, I will go somewhere else.
See, that's
so if you don't have that opportunity, then what is going on? You gotta dive in a little deeper. Like
what's happening is this. Okay, because I'm limited to, I don't have a bunch of bodies of water. I can't lake jump and stuff. You know, I know he's asking about what baits and all this stuff. It goes back to sort of our overarching
it's more
biology,
stuff. Right?
Well, I mean, he's saying, you know, fishing at night after the spawn, post spawn. Okay, I'm just going to pick this apart, Charles. I'm just going to sort of give you a couple things. He says, I've been picking my days properly, the moon phase, the winds, all that. Okay? Don't, you can't say I'm right and say nothing right is happening. Okay? So maybe you're not picking where you're fishing, how you're fishing, and all that stuff correctly. So it's like one of those things. I catch myself doing it, like I'll beat it to attrition because I know I'm right, I know it's going to happen. So you've got to start at zero. That's it. That's like if I'm like up against the wall, I don't go, hey, you know, I'm paying attention to the moon phase and all this stuff. Obviously, it's not clicking. So
something's not working.
Something's not right. So let's not say that I've got part of it right, but everything's gone wrong. So everything's wrong. Period. Done. Zero. At 57 hours on the water, everything's wrong. I'm going to start off again, you know, because you said you plan on using JB depth raters. JB Radler, Shallow Invaders, and Spinners. Okay.
Can I just interject for a second?
Yeah,
what
go for
are
it.
Your water temperatures?
Well, that's the thing.
That will tell us the universal. I mean, give
right.
me something here.
But that's the thing, you know? Is don't plan on what I was getting at is like, don't plan on using anything. Everything is an option because like, I deal with it here in the South.
That's a great statement.
Here's the thing. It's like spawn post. Not all of them. Not all of them spawn at the same time.
That's also very true.
Okay.
Yes.
The fish on the north end of the lake or the sunny side might do it a week before the ones on the other side.
If you have a big body of water, absolutely.
Remember that movie, Endless Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, that Jim Carrey movie? They get their brains erased.
Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Thank you. I knew you'd come of some use. Say it again, please, because I sound dumber. One more time.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
I couldn't even say it if I tried.
No, I'm
in the movie. It's really good.
But and what happens in that movie? What do they do to him? Fill us in.
Basically fries his brain, so he has no recollection of his relationship with the girl Clementine.
And so, Charles, you need to clear your mind and start over.
That's awesome. All
and
right.
and this is what I call, honest to God, I have a name for everything. I call this a Colonel Clink moment. I know nothing. Remember that on Hogan's Heroes? I'm dating myself. But clear your mind and go, everything.
See, let me just.
Lay it on me. What do you got?
Well, you know, I'm just thinking some basic things here. You know, guiding wise, I'd say, okay, Charles, you know, looking at your electronics, if you're, you know, well-versed with reading electronics, you know, let's pretend it's not spawn. Okay. Let's pretend you're fishing for fish that could potentially eat or they're not having sex type thing. You know, are you on bait fish? Are you fishing in relevant areas? Are you like you said, pull yourself out, erase your mind, go to the basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yes.
The most basic thing is big fish eat little fish.
Yes.
And it sounds super dumb, but like at the end of the day, you know, if you're not like in places where muskies are going to eat other things, then you're not, you know, I don't know. Maybe, you know, that's a generalization because that's not always true. But, you know, there's just like you said, like you have to pull yourself away from that scenario and be reflective of it. And also understanding of this idea that like I think we started off as a joke, but it's not really a joke. That like, and you've been on these trips with the best muskie fishermen in the world, arguably, and I have been on trips mm-hmm. with the best muskie fishermen in the world, Joe Bucher. We've been on and also let me just add on the best muskie water in the world. And have I ever gone 57 hours with Joe Bucher and not caught a muskie? Yes, I have. It happens.
Yep.
And it is why we love the sport and why we love hate the sport. Because you can go 3 days and not see one of these things and you could be doing everything right.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't happen. Like, and you know what? I will end my statement there with this. This is a classic statement and this is a Joe-ism for sure
mm-hmm.
that I have definitely taken. You have to remember, muskies do not need to eat.
Man, he just said that on the last podcast. He hammered that, and it's so true.
Well, we're great minds think alike.
Absolutely.
Right? You know, we need to eat. We're mammals. We right. need to keep our temperature up. We need to, you know, regulate our body. You know, this is amazing. There was a study on, and I don't quote me on this, but this is I when I was a geek in my younger days, I looked into all this stuff.
You're still a geek.
I still am a geek, but when I was really geeking out,
extra
when I
geeky.
Was, you know, in college and I had nothing to do but, drink Sprites and Pepsis and look up musky facts and things.
All those Sprite and Pepsi days back there in college.
Hey,
eh?
this is a podcast, Stephen. Come on,
absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely.
So anyway, so I'm drinking Pepsi and I'm looking up, you know, whatever it is that's on my mind. And I came across this amazing study. About this is in Europe. This is I think I don't know where this was. This was in like Sweden or Norway, big pike capital of Europe. And they had these giant northern pike that are, you know, well over 30 pounds, mm-hmm. and they measure everything on the metric system and meters and centimeters and all that. And it's, you know, whatever, that's cool. So they found that these giant pike were burying themselves, and they only found this because people were like, where are they? We can't catch them. So they sent divers down. I'll never forget this article I read. It was so cool. And they found these giant northern pike were buried in the mud on the bottom of these lakes. They had lowered their temperature down to an almost hibernating state, mm-hmm. where they weren't even burning any calories. And that always makes me, it always humbles me, and it makes me remember that, like, look, the cold-blooded animals, they don't need to eat. Like, yeah. You need to eat, but they don't need to do anything, man. And no. So, you know, you have to keep that in mind when you're chasing these critters, right? I mean, like.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to, nothing's going to force their hand.
No, I mean, like, you know, weather makes them vulnerable. The moon makes them vulnerable. But you know, do they actually need to eat? No, they don't. They're cold blooded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can lower their metabolism like this flip of a switch. And so do the seasons, as you know, cold water master guru Stephen Paul. You know, it's like, you know, they cold water, man. They, you know, they don't eat as much.
They don't. You know? Yeah, I mean. You're killing because it's. I won't get on the tip for too long, but
I know we're very guilty. We're bad tonight.
We're very. Yeah, I've had a couple Pepsis. Is my problem. Anyway, I had the same ones you were drinking in college, my friend. Anyway, the problem that we have is that we give fish anthropomorphic qualities. You know, we sort of project like. If I was a muskie, what would I do? Well, you have
Dude,
no
it's
clue
so true.
Because
you've
never been a muskie. I've been in my dreams, but the problem is a muskie is more akin to a snake than a human.
Absolutely, yes.
They're so cold blooded, you know. So it's just like a snake. And I said this on the podcast: a snake can go like 6 months without eating.
Dude, that is like the neatest. You and I have talked about some cool stuff, but that's a really neat statement. I think humans. I think muskie hunters give muskies humanistic characteristics.
Human
characteristics.
Yes.
We give them like minds. We give them feelings and emotions that they don't have. These things. I mean, I don't know because I've never been a muskie.
Mm-hmm.
But do fish feel emotions? Now we should. I hope to God we get a psychologist. Please, I hope to God we get a psychologist that will prove us or teach us something.
The muskie
that
whisperer
so cool.
That he's like petting them on. This muskie is depressed.
I mean.
He's failed. That one was shy. That one
now,
scared.
Now, wouldn't that be interesting if muskies actually were depressed? I mean, like now I. Because I think that I think it's well known, obviously, that dogs and cats and other mammals that humans know. Boy, this is going on a tangent, but this is an interesting, honestly, a very interesting topic. But, you know, that other animals, you know, muskies are in the animal kingdom. I know that much as a biology teacher.
Right.
But do muskies get depressed?
I know I do.
I know.
I can tell you that guaranteed.
So. I wonder if they talk to each other like, just go eat a freaking giant pike, man. You'll feel better.
I should shut up and go to the next one, but I hope they don't have feelings. Can you imagine if you're like, man, I'm having a real bad day. I'm hungry and we eat this. Oh, shit. There's a giant hook in my face. Like, imagine if like, imagine if there's a, like, it's almost, I always say this, it's like alien abduction. Like, if they had feelings, it'd be like, man, I'm going to eat this. And then I'm, like, ripped up into a hovering ship that's above me. Literally, it is a ship that is hovering above them that has sucked them up and put them and photographed and documented them. That is the closest thing to an alien abduction I've ever seen. Chaz Martin anal probed a muskie one time, folks, just like that.
Wait a second. I never did that shit.
That was me. God. Couple Pepsis
Next
here,
question.
Folks. Next question. I can
wait a second, Steven. I never told you. Just
no, okay. let the, you wait till the video comes out of me and Chaz. Yeah. We just call it Musky Abduction. We're wearing green suits saying Nanu.
Well, it might Nanu. Be after this freaking COVID.
Oh man, I'm going crazy. Yeah. I've obviously we've lost our minds here, folks. All right. Yep. Thomas says, good afternoon, gentlemen. I hope you're all keeping nice. Your sanity during these strange days.
Well, that's actually really nice.
It is. Obviously, we're not. We somehow went from musky fishing to alien. It's like fire in the sky, if you remember that movie.
Yeah, with depressed muskies. With and like, yeah, this
maybe we're literally projecting. You want a musky be depressed as you are, and maybe I have a Freudian problem about probing.
Don't get me started on astrophysics, man, because that is some cool stuff to talk about.
Chaz Martin is he is the Michio Kaku of musky fishing. So,
wait, hang on now. Before we get to this question, Stephanie, tell us what you bought.
I just bought a new Patagonia coat.
Whoa!
It's very cute. It's a light blue color.
Ooh.
And I bought some new hiking boots.
Very nice.
Yeah, they were top rated on the internet. Lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
They're purple. They're cute.
Why did you choose purple?
Well, I had the option between purple and gray, and I figured with the terrain that Chaz and I are traversing, getting a little dirty, that the purple would be a better alternative to the gray. Mm-hmm. They won't get as dirty. More.
Those are really thoughtful.
Yeah.
Wow.
More durable. They're also cuter than the gray. So.
Wow. That's
a
great.
Lot of thought went into it. This entire time you guys have been recording this podcast, I've been going back and forth. Purple, gray, purple,
that's,
gray.
That's great.
How long have we been on this podcast?
54 minutes.
So that's four hours and 54 minutes. But I'm glad you got to the purple shoes.
That's wonderful. I've just learned when a woman talks about something she's bi, all I say is that's great and that's wonderful. Good Lord, everybody, we've lost our minds. All right, the rest of Thomas's question here. He says, I'm looking to purchase a downsizer setup, but it seems that the St. Croix always sells them in Legend Series. I do not have the budget to buy a Legend Series St. Croix downsizers and was wondering if you had any recommendations for a rod and reel combo for downsizing I could get away with that wouldn't take an entire paycheck. Maybe I could
Steven. It sounds like you got to go to muskyshop.com, dude.
I'm going. Literally. I was trying to finish the question. God.
I know, but I ripped
Lord.
You off there, man. I'm like, muskyshop.com,
listen,
dude.
He's going from talking to astrophysics to now we went to go to the muskyshop.com.
Well, that's a great question.
It
and
is.
Dude, you know, Steven is you really started the podcast off yourself by saying, look, man, like you don't need, we actually started this entire podcast off with the premise that it's not the amount of baits you need. It's not the, you know, and we've talked like really mad specs on rods,
mm-hmm.
but at the end of the day, you can catch with the technology that exists, you know, in 2020, I mean, all these great companies are making really, you know, pretty decent, you know, rods and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, for a downsizer setup these days, there, you know, there's a plethora of options. I will throw out my, option here with St. Croix for a downsized rod. This is one I've used as Stephen is looking up some
yep.
fantastic options here. I will throw my personal favorite out there for a really reasonable price. St. Croix makes a Mowdown. Now this is don't judge me on
are
this.
Are you arguing? This, are you literally arguing with yourself already?
I'm arguing with listeners saying, oh, he just said bass.
Bias.
I'm about to drop the bass word here.
Bias.
The B word. So St. Croix, and this, and I have to give Joe Bucher tons of credit on this because he was the guy that turned me on to this. Joe was, you know, filming lots of bass series as he does early season, and he goes, hey man, dude, St. Croix's Mojo Bass Rod in their heavy power fast action is
yes.
like it's a little too heavy for bass. No offense, St. Croix, but it's like it is the best. And this is where the whole you know, Legend Downsizer series even came to be. Yeah. He goes, look, the Mojo Bass Heavy series, it's Mojo Bass Heavy. It's their 710 heavy power, fast action. That is the ultimate, like, downsizer rod. And so I use that for a variety of years, and I'll shut up now, but I would say on a low budget for like a really quality St. Croix rod, you know, and I still, you know, in my guiding setup, that rod, the 710 Mojo, is in my guiding setup. I love that rod. I can throw everything on that, from 700 and 700 Booker tails and top raiders to 5-inch shell raiders and JB rattlers, and like, I mean, you name it. Like, it's actually really neat, because that rod can do. It's actually the rod Stephanie here that's bought these wonderful purple boots. That's the rod that I give her
boots.
A lot of time, because it's lightweight. It's a little bit, you know, shorter than a lot of our longer, you know, high powered conventional musky rods we're using nowadays. And, it gets the job done. So what do we got on muskyshop.com?
I've got it pulled up, but I've been holding off to say what everybody that listens all regularly expecting me to say.
There's going to be some great prices out there, right? There is, but let me
speak my piece real quick for 2 seconds.
Okay.
I'll ask you, what do you think my downsizing rod is, Chaz Martin?
9 foot.
The same rod I throw with everything else.
Yeah, the same
on.
Rod you throw with everything. It doesn't matter.
My empty spool. I'll bring it to you every day, folks. One rod, one reel. I have an extra. My fancy fast reel is a 6.3-1. I keep it laying around on a 9-footer. At the end of the day, what you got to do, and this goes back to like that first question, is if you want it, you can figure it out with what you got. Okay. I was throwing JB rattlers today on a 9-footer that's a heavy action. If you want to throw a JB rattler on a big heavy rod, sidearm that son of a gun.
You can do it. But let's say you've got a little bit of money, like, so you don't want to break
the
bank.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you want, I get it.
Know,
don't.
I know.
No,
I'm just saying. Let's say you set out like $150 or less.
Well, for a nice rod,
and you're not traveling now because of COVID-19. And
I've got it pulled up. I mean, I see they've got a 7.6 medium heavy.
Now, who's got this?
Shimano, got the muskyshop.com. Muskyshop.com has
So you're the guy that starts off the podcast. That was your voice in the start of the podcast.
The Musky 360 podcast is brought to you by.
Guys, yeah. It's revealed that it mystery really voice is Stephen.
Isn't
Paul.
That weird?
That, it's you.
That's me. That's Musky awesome. Mastery with Chaz Martin. Anyway. God, sorry. I've had so many Pepsis. Anyway, the. I actually texted my wife. I said, "Would you bring me a Pepsi, dear? We're trying to do the podcast. I might have another Pepsi before we're done." So anyway, they have a Shimano Compre Musky Rod in a 7.6 medium heavy power for $99.99.
Wow, that's a great price.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Actually, I mean, that's 7.6. What else? I mean, that's like the $100 version. I actually have the 7.6 Shimano Sojourn Medium, which is like was $40, and it'll launch like a 500 series. Also, too, Akuma, and I've talked to Jay about Akuma rods. Akuma is actually a little bit lighter feeling than like the action in an Akuma. So they've got an 8.6.
I would just say that, you know, and I'm not, you know, I, yeah. I know Shimano makes great product, and I know that Okuma's been in the game, the rod game, actually for a long time
now. Oh yeah. Japanese.
Yeah, they make a great rod, and they probably make a really great downsizer rod. And
well, they've got the as far as what Musky Shop has, they have an 8.6 heavy. And I just remember Jay telling me that I was calling him and asking Jay at the Musky Shop about options. And he said that the Akuma runs a little bit lighter, so that 8.6 heavy might be an option because the lure weight for it is a 2 ounce through 8 ounce, which is like,
holy cow, yeah,
that's sort of in the game. So that's an 8.6, that's $119. If you catch them, I know they've been running a bunch of specials where they'll ship rods for free. So that would be $119 to your door with a 2 ounce. I mean, to me, that's like the winner chicken dinner money in the bank kind of number there. 119.
Well, see, but you're and I like this, you know, you we're very similar and very different in some, in some, you know, areas. I've, you know, you're talking downsizer for me, but this is coming from a guy that, you know, I mean, I do fish with probably more musky rods than you. So I do, and that's not out of like, not that you couldn't, but saying I personally do gear up with some more rods. And when it comes to my downsizer rods, I do like that shorter than 8 foot. Cause I, you know, and you and I are also at different heights. You're what are you, six? So what?
Nine.
I'm six.
I'm 7 foot two. 6'3".
Well, but that does make a difference when I'm 5'10" and you're 6'3". So when I'm, because you're literally, you know, your hand might be a foot taller than me. So when you're working an 8 foot rod, or an 8 foot six, and I'm working a 7 foot six rod. I mean, think about this. Like, I mean, it has nothing to do with, but like, you know, it depends on your boat.
Uh-huh.
If you are fishing out of a John boat, I mean, your downsizer rod at 8 foot six may be very different. Feeling, you know, if you're fishing that out of a rowboat, for example, if you're fishing out of a John boat out of a river. So I'm just throwing a couple ideas out.
Well, the other one I pulled it up here is the, and I love these rods, by the way. My main musky rod that I throw all the time is a Bulldog Predator series, which is cheap. Yes, I throw one all the time. They have a 8 foot medium heavy 2 to 10 ounce for $99.
Wow.
That's cheap. But yeah, that's one thing we talk about when people ask about, like, everybody wants that blanket statement about, and this is overarching about rods in general. They'll be like, what's the perfect musky rod? And like you said, for a guy that's, you know, if a guy's like 5'5" versus a guy that's 6'6", I mean, I've got a client, and I know he listens to the podcast, Tim. Tim's from the Netherlands, and he's got a really cool accent. Tim is like 6'7". He is giant. He's just like, it's like fishing with Manute Bol. Remember him from the NBA? It's like, and I feel he's one of these people that make me feel tiny. He's just a giant dude. But he fishes a 9'6" and it's like a 7'6". It might as well be.
Yeah, it's all relevant,
yeah,
right?
So
I mean, like, it's all relevant.
There's not a perfect one, but man, Muskie Shop's got some killer options. And
well,
like
I think the biggest thing, just, you know, getting back to the crux of that question was, not going to break the banks. Like you said, Muskie Shop's got a lot of rods that are $100 or less, or within $115.
Yeah, and watch for those sales. I mean, that just, there's so many, man, if you can buy gear right now, there is like killer deals going on in gear. So the next one up is Luke Duke. He says, I am a newer muskie angler. I have a cabin in northern Minnesota, and I'm about 30 minutes away from Leech Lake. Should I be taking advantage of Leech Lake, or should I stay on a smaller lake like Mantrap to get more experience while learning musky fishing before I get overwhelmed with a big lake like Leech? Man, that's a cool question. What should he cut his teeth on small fish, or should he get out there in the big show? What do you think?
Wow. I mean,
that's thought. I appreciate Luke. I appreciate how thoughtful that is. He's thinking the right way. What do you think?
So hang on. So Steven, as a side note here, Stephanie's going up for a FaceTime with one of her girlfriends. She's bringing a Pepsi away from the podcast studio. You can't bring the Pepsi by my external hard drive that's uploaded a new video.
Absolutely not. No, Papa Bless. No Pepsi.
I learned this the first week of dating Chaz.
You can't bring your Pepsi anywhere close to the computer.
Stephanie,
or
I got a narc. Can you eat in Chaz's car?
Absolutely not.
Okay,
I'm
gonna
sneak like French onion soup. Like,
Who the hell eats French onion soup in a car? That's what I want to know.
I eat the messiest things possible. Say I'm gonna eat that in his
car. All right. Hey, so you should do a whole podcast on
doing
the
truck. I just want to know, envisioning somebody's got like this pot when it's got melted cheese on it. Of course,
Stephanie,
like if you
bring to go French onion soup.
French onion soup. What?
Oh, she threatens French onion soup.
I love it. Well, the reason I ask, and it's shout out to the musky guru, Tyler Andrews, the man, the myth, the legend. He comes down to fish with me, he gets in the car, and he looks at me like really weird, right? And he's got this Subway sandwich. And he goes, "Hey, man, can I eat in your car?" And I just looked at him.
I ruined them all.
I just ruined them.
Oh, my God, that's too funny.
My wonderful wife, Jody, is bringing me a Pepsi. Say hi, Jody. She just death glared me. So, but anyway.
Okay. We're back on
French onion
Big
soup.
Fish trophy waters.
French onions. I want to know more on French. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That will be one of the funniest tangents of a podcast. Dare we go down it?
I'm not going to get. Man, that's just ruined it because my plan is like when we end up fishing together up there, right? I was just going to have, like, coleslaw in my pocket or something and just start eating at it, like, in my front pocket.
Here's my, like...
Are you a neat freak?
I don't want to call
I'm
going to
interview you. Are you OCD neat freak?
I am and I'm not. So
rapid fire.
You're probably going to say, like, no, it's not possible. But, like, okay, fine. Here we go down the tangent.
When you're done with a bait, do you put it back where it belongs?
No.
You don't?
Okay. No, I don't. It depends. Like I put it in an area where it's not going to, hit my foot or a hand or hurt somebody. Right. B, it's not going to snag a net, is probably worse.
Oh,
like
dude.
I could give a whatever about hurting somebody, but, and I shouldn't say that, but I should say like, look, are we going to snag the net on something that I don't
true.
Want
I just, I'm just checking. I, you said that, and I've got to tell you something. I was going to tell Chaz this off air, but I'll share it with everybody. It's so embarrassing. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. Yesterday, I'm out. I have a dude on the boat. Me and you talked about said dude already, right? We're trying to catch a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I move said big one, and I'm the mess. Like, the front of my boat, it looks like if someone bombed Raleigh and Helens is what my boat looks like at all times. Like, it's like exploded. You know, there's just crap stuck everywhere. I go to figure eight this fish that is definitely a 50. My pants legs caught in a thing. I go into machine gun stance and I rip the crotch of my jeans wide open. So literally, I'm dangling and figure eighting a fish, dude.
It
was the most pathetic thing you've ever seen. I'm like, turn away. And I'm trying to turn like this guy's look. So,
I wish that was on YouTube.
Oh my God. Goodness. What's wrong with us? Anyway,
I mean, I can defend my position here I will vehemently defend my position.
Right.
And I think I have a valid, defense on this whole thing. And, because here's the thing. If you get in my boat, and I mess with guy clients all the time, I love this because I will tell them, like, hey, guys, there's no, food in my car. You can drink coffee or, Pepsis, whatever you want. Actually, real Pepsis.
Right.
But, when you get to the boat, and if this always happens, somebody spills coffee and I make a big scene, like, oh, my God. We're going to have to, I'm going to charge you a fee. And, the look in their eyes is like, oh my God, he's so upset. And I'm like, yeah, just get, the boat I could give. I mean, if the thing gets blood and shit, man.
Yeah.
And, I mean, literally musky shit and like piss and you name it, the boat gets dirty and you wash it with a hose. I could give a crap. You can replace the carpeting. The inside of my truck, I just bought a new Jeep.
Right.
God, I'm I don't even make enough to, buy this damn thing. And it's like, I'm planning on having it for
ever.
Here's what I'm going to say. I had my old Jeep for 200,000 miles. It was 200,006 before one of the cylinder seven went.
Mm-hmm.
And it was over 200,000. It was going to cost me more to fix it than to buy a new engine for the damn Jeep.
Absolutely.
But somebody could have gotten in my now the outside of it. I had a deer run into it. I've ran through all kinds of crap going off roading. That's fine. But the inside of it, you could sit in my 2010 old Jeep and you'd be like, damn, this thing just came off the floor.
Pristine.
And I'm not afraid of water getting into it. Like if you're like, see, Paul, if you were soaked in your rain gear and you sat in the front seat of my old Jeep or even my new Jeep, I wouldn't blink an eye. I could give a crap if you sat and you had water all over the console. But my biggest pet peeve is like crumbs and crap from food over time. It just gets all over the place. And it's like, I just, you know, it's like, I just, I don't know. I mean, I can do it if I, you just, I just got to make up my mind once I buy a car. It's like, I'm either going to do it or not. And
I'm going to eat, I'm going to eat hot wings in your new car.
Dude, there was all of my friends were so pissed off because when I told them I sold the old Jeep. I know we got to get off this question. Oh, yeah. I told them I sold the old Jeep.
This is not a question, by the way. This is some Chaz Martin Jeep tangent. But go ahead.
I know. Okay, can we get back? Okay, Steven, this is probably one of my worst. This was bad. Okay,
folks listening, this is what happened. Me and Chaz talk on the phone, and this was what happens. Literally, the podcast is just us with your questions inside there of, like, me and him, like, we just get each other going, fired up.
I'm excited about this question. We got way off. I mean, this is probably
should I fish Leech Lake, or should I learn smaller water? Fire away.
Should I go first?
I would think so.
Okay, after that tangent, I should redeem myself. I should redeem myself.
That was an epic tangent, though.
That was pretty. That was actually. I didn't think we were going to go down it, and then I took us down.
All right, shitty. Go,
boy. You know, first off, I'm instantly thinking, you know, Leech Lake for small lakes. What kind of boat do you have? What kind of electronics do you have? Off the top of my head, I would say. Boy, if you have access to a body of water that has consistently for over a decade produced big fish, go to the big water and try your hand at, take a chance. Get out there and give it a try. Because you know what? You might surprise yourself and you might get out there and catch the biggest fish of your life. And I say, you know what? If you're around Leech Lake, and I know I'm probably speaking for both of us. If you're on trophy water, and it's that close to you, go hit it. What are you thinking? Now if you got a real windy day and you're in nasty weather, and you got no options, yeah, go to your small lakes. Go get off the big water. But man, if you got an option at big fish. And Leech Lake doesn't just have numbers of fish in what I know.
Right.
It's got big ones, but it's also got some numbers too. It's not just a big trophy fish with low fish potential. Get out there, you know, take a chance.
I mean, dude, my thought is this, and sort of the, what I would say if he's new, Luke, if like this is a completely new thing or something like that, play around with the small ones so you learn proper release tactics, proper netting. By the way, I mean, he's saying he's new, but I get what you're saying. I'm going to get there. But, you know, the thing being this is like, you know, you obviously we got great resources here on the app on how to do that. If like you, all your skills, like if you have the basics, like I could reel in a big fish and let him go, do both. You know, I agree, because the thing is, this is like, you know, big water like that could be demoralizing, but it's like, okay. If you got a Friday and a Saturday, why don't you do like Friday morning at the small lake and then go in the evening on that or vice versa? And so you're not limiting yourself on both ends of the spectrum.
I think you're absolutely right, man. You gotta do a little both. If you're getting new into the sport, I forgot that part.
Well, I mean, and dude, the thing is this. Well, yeah, because there's a 40-minute gap there. brought to you by your local Jeep dealership. I swear to
you. You're like, damn, man, Jeep's the new sponsor.
I'm going to wait. I'm going to like be sitting in your truck and secretly have a hot wing in there. You know, just be mid-conversation.
Dude, my buddies have done that. They've snuck in crap on me, man. I'm like, oh, my God.
But that's we covered it. Do both. Why not both? Like the tortilla girl. I got to tell you, funny, you're talking about funny boat things before I get to the next question. This last summer, if you can imagine, August in Tennessee is hot, right? It's hot. Now, the water's not hot because it comes out of the Smoky Mountains. A lot of people don't realize it, but it's fishable. And this dude, all day long, he's been drinking Mountain Dews and eating Flamin' Hot Cheetos. And it's, And I'm like, dude, I was like, do you want water? I got waters. Oh, I got Dew. It's time to do the Dew, son. You know, whatever these people that drink Mountain. All you Mountain Dew people disgust me.
I'm not one of them, but whatever.
Disgusting. But anyway, if you drink Mountain Dew, I'm sorry. You're not disgusting. I'm just telling a story here. So it's no, I genuinely, I really think you're disgusting. But anyway, it's hot out. He's eating Flamin' Hot Cheetos. He's doing the Dew. And he looks at me, and we're like two-footers, like Chop, right? And he goes, I think I'm going to be sick. Mind you, we're on a boat. If you turn your head to the left, it's over top of water. He turns his head to the right and vomits on me, on my pants leg, and all over the floor of my boat. And it's hot Cheetos and Mountain Dew. My boat smelled like hot Cheetos and Mountain Dew for a month, dude.
No way.
I took that thing. Like, I took him. He told me, he's like, man, I'm okay. I feel fine. I'm like, dude, if you're throwing up on the boat, we're done. I took it straight to the car wash and blasted it out. It still smelled like hot Cheetos and Mountain Dew for a month.
Oh, that's brutal.
Anyway, the next question is from John W. He says, can I throw big lures around opener in Northwest Ontario like mini Medusas or double nine blades or tens?
Wait, what's his name?
John W.
He just asked me that on my YouTube channel.
Well, he's hitting you on both fronts. Maybe he didn't like your answer. Maybe he wants mine.
Maybe he didn't. Well, I did tell him, amen, yes, sir. Like, and I said, especially if you're on bodies of water where muskies, you know, are targeting larger forage species in general, you know, comparatively speaking, if we're talking about our smaller lakes where they're eating panfish or whatnot, I said, hey, absolutely throw big lures. And there's so many factors that go into it, but I say yes.
The thing is this. I mean, I've caught fish in this early spring on mag dogs, or I've caught them on 500 booker tails. You got to do it all, and you got to do it all the right way. But why not? I mean, if that's what you got and that's what you're comfortable with, make it work.
Yeah, it's like the can I thing. It's like, well, and you know, yes, and I would say, like, the more power to you under the right environmental conditions is what I'm a big fan of. But when you got like really favorable conditions, I tend to upsize and throw some bigger stuff because I don't know if it's a confidence thing or I think I'm going to get a more aggressive reaction on a fish, which I think can happen under good conditions. I throw big.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when conditions suck, I go small.
Well, so, I mean, it's sometimes I think me and you do the same thing. I mean, Joe Lee said it. It's like, sometimes it's like, you know, you go, oh, JB Rattler is a throwback, you know, but sometimes I'm like, give me a 9-inch Magnum. You know, sometimes it's going to be like, let's take it up a notch and like make them mad, you know,
absolutely. Throw something really just buck the trend,
you know, and it's just John, as far as his question is just, you got to read the water. You just got to read the water because it's just like you said, if conditions are, I mean, if it's overcast, it's humid, it's, you know, things are cooking with gas and it looks good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But back to our first question, you better know how to use those lures. That's the whole trick there is. And
it's so true.
I think that's like what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast pretty much sums it up. Is like, if you don't know what to do with them, what good are they?
Well, and honestly, and this is kind of funny, but, you know, I got to attribute to Joe here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he's going to listen in 120 minutes.
Joe listens to every second.
1 hour and 20 minutes into our podcast here, if Joe is going to be in here.
Hey, but Joe.
Joe put out a recent podcast, and I don't even know if this is his most popular one. It probably isn't. But it should be, and it was just like three keys to elevate
his vlog. And if you're looking for that vlog, it's under the article section on the front tab of the Muskie app.
But you're talking, but Stephen, what reminded me of that is you just said you better know how to use those lures with your exact statement, and it goes back to the basics, man.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to improve as an angler, you know, that you got to check that vlog out by Joe. He goes over his three keys to angling success. And it's very simple. And it's also very poignant. I mean, it really hits home. It's awesome. And anybody, if you're new to this game And if you're a veteran, everybody should listen to it, because it doesn't matter where you're at. I think I just got to say, I really love Joe's vlog on that. It is really a cool just analysis of, you know, all these questions we're talking about in this podcast, even my rants on eating food in the Jeep. It's all covered in Joe's podcast.
Joe covers it at length. Joe got in so much shit because he ate a foot-long Coney from Sonic in Chaz's Jeep. Almost destroyed.
You know, what? When I'm in, I actually will, out of my own respect for my rule, here we go again. I always ask, even though I always know, I said, Joe, I always ask, hey, man, do you mind if I eat this sub? And he's like, no, but, you know, clean up your, and I always make sure I clean up my trash. I always make sure it's all organized. Yeah, clean it up.
I mean, I got a new Jeep. I let people eat in it. It's fine. You can let them chat. I'm telling you, Tyler looked at me like he was asking if he's like, he might as well be like, hey man, can I make a pack?
I think I brainwashed him.
I know, because it would have been easier to be like, hey man, can I take a pass at your mom? You know, he was like, hey,
did that just happen on the podcast right now?
Tyler Andrews made a pass at my mom, okay, folks? It's just,
oh God. Did that
but,
just happen
on the podcast? He's sitting there going, hey, Mr. Steve, can I eat?
The guru
blew his boat up this week, Chaz.
I know, man. I was trying to tell him that, like, look, man, the E-Techs will shut themselves off before they commit major damage.
Yep.
And that was my whole thing before.
The guru has the biggest boat on the planet.
That thing, dude, if you
it's
see
74
that boat,
foot mirror craft.
If you see that thing coming from a distance, it's like, it looks as if God is taking his hand, like just going across the lake and just I hope, Tyler, will you please make fun of my boat now, please?
Oh,
but
man.
Like, seriously, if God would take his hand and just like go across the lake, like there it is. It's coming.
Well, I can't knock it. Like, I was knocking. Like, I got a lame boat, so it doesn't matter, you know. But it's like, he's got the party barge.
Mine's 30 years old, so whatever. Dude,
yeah, whatever.
Know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe we're just jealous of the guru's giant party barge.
Maybe we are. But you know what? Maybe we are.
Well, I've had a couple Pepsis, so we're going to wrap up this podcast.
We got one more question to wrap it up. One more question to wrap it up.
What's that?
I don't know. You
okay.
Got one more in
yeah,
there?
I got one more. All right.
That's the last question. Last question.
John, another John wants to know, what are some good early season lures for Ontario?
Oh, wow. Well, who wants to go first? I got two on my end. They're my... You listeners out there already know my two, but
Chaz Martin's going to say 500 Booker Tail, JB Rattler.
That's shoot. I didn't even have to say that. That was it.
Goldilocks and Perch. Oh
and
man. I'm teasing. We're predictable, Chaz. Let's
you know me too well.
Well, let's,
and
okay.
I'm going to predict on yours. You're going to have cause you really are a deep diver type guy. So
yes.
I would say that. And I hope I'm not going to, you know, make you say this now, but I mean, I would say you're a deep diver guy. I know you by trade. You fish deep divers consistently as I've known you.
Mm-hmm.
So one of your early season go-tos has got to be deep diver season.
Yeah. It's the baby DR. Duh.
I knew it.
Oh, yeah, and the other is the JB. So what I would say is this. If you listen to the podcast, you know me, Chaz, are going to go 500 Booker Tail, boring. JB Rattler, boring. Baby Depth Raider, boring. You've heard it. You've heard it. So let's twist it up. What are some other ones? What else could you do? So I'll fire away by saying early season is a full-size jointed Depth Raider slow retrieve, right? And
dude. Slow retrieving. I'm not joking.
Strip off as much. Literally, I want two turns of the handle worth of line on there.
As much as I'll make fun of you in just a second, but yeah. Hang on now. Now, no. Are you now when you say slow retrieve, and you and I'm imagining a 5.3-1 with half of the with half of the line on
it.
Now when I'm getting back into serious mode. Is your jointed shallow raider?
Jointed depth raider.
Oh, I thought you were saying join a shallow raider. Oh, I was going to say, is that like right under the surface or not? But join a depth raider. You're joining over
sand flats, and I want it where the back is just barely under the surface.
That's what I was thinking. So you're really working it almost as a top water, but just really subsurface.
Rod tip up, slow turn, and that thing's head down. And if you watch bait fish that are struggling in the spring, at least where I'm at, they'll be kicking there on the surface.
Dude, and that strike has got to be incredible.
It's stupid. So I literally like that. It's like I said, people will know where we're going to go anyway. So alternatives, literally I'm throwing the jointed because I want the body bent. I want it like crumpled over. So the tail's actually hanging down. It's sort of like broke back, just coming through. They're like, nah. And it's just barely subsurface. So that's like an alternative.
Okay, I got another alternative. I'm going to turn folks right to your podcast on modifying slot masters and other safety pin spinner baits, man. Like my early season go-to is I modify the crap out of my slot masters, and like that to me is one of my ultimate early season baits. If it's, you know, I mean, you did the podcast on it, you reworked them. I mean, you got to check it out, folks. I mean, that's where it's at for me, especially when I'm fishing super, super stumpy, deadfall ridden, like dark water bays that I like to fish early season. I need a safety. I can't throw the 500 in there. Because they get snagged. You have to throw a safety pin spinnerbait, like, or a topwater. You can't do it. So you need something that is in line with single hook, you know, safety pin style.
And the thing is, this is like, you know, we talk about trailers and stuff, and like one thing you can do with those slot masters, even, and this is heresy, but if you got one that's beat up and you don't love it anymore or something, is you can take and cut that skirt off and just have like just a grub on there. So now we've got like a 4-inch grub with a little blade by it. And that's just like a springtime killer.
Well, you know? Yeah, it's like a MEPS, what do they call those? MEPS anglers. I mean, those old school where there's just like a hook, there's a treble hook and a blade.
Yeah. And it just,
and those always caught fish back in like, you know, whenever it is, 60s, you know.
1942.
We're
actually going to keep time now, from now on out, pre-plague, post-plague. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Pre-plague, post-plague. Yeah, seriously, man.
Well, we're going to end on that high note, folks. So, Chaz, as always, we have been on a tangent filled ramble here.
We have. I'm going to have a lot of people that are, you know, mailing me sub sandwiches to put in my car now.
I was actually going to recommend you can go to muskymastery.com. And for 50 cents a day, folks, you can donate 2 quarters to vacuum out Chaz Martin's car. Only you can prevent lettuce between Chaz's console and his seat.
I don't want that lettuce in the console.
Dude, once again, we're going to end on this. French onion soup. Who the hell eats French onion soup? All right, thank you, folks.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild. Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and The Muskie Shop.